This is the Ray Lucia Show.
Coming to the bat for the answers here.
The one show that helps you make better money moves. The program all about your money, your business, and your life.
You guys talk about a lot of really good information that even I can understand.
Call Ray now at 844-RAY-SHOW, 844-RAY-SHOW. This is the Ray Lucia Show.
Thank you very much. Welcome. This is, you heard the guy. This is the Ray Lucia Show, the one talk show in America that helps you make better money moves. The show all about your money, your business, and your life. Speaking of business, Johnny Dean. Hey there, John.
How you doing? Well, I shouldn't say hi. I don't like starting off an hour by me saying, how are you, Ray?
How you doing?
How you doing? But how you doing there, Ray?
How do you do, Dean?
Nice to have you back.
No, it is good.
It's been a lively show so far, and we'll continue
what
on.
What a week,
here.
Huh?
I tell you, it's been something. You know, I feel like I'm in the groove. I just feel like I
told you,
like
we got the band back together.
Got the band back together.
I told
together.
You it'd be just like, you know, well, wait a minute. Let's see. John is dead. John. Paul is still around.
Oh,
George
oh,
is dead.
Guys. Yeah, and
Ringo is still around.
Well, all it takes is two, you know.
Okay,
what?
Well, yeah, you want to be Ringo or Paul?
Let's see. I'll take either one.
Okay, you can be Ringo.
I can be Ringo. Yeah, you don't want me keeping a beat. I'm a pianist. Pianists have no sense of rhythm.
Yeah, well, I'm all a lead guitar player, and I don't have sense of anything.
All right, well, that's us.
Because I'm a crappy lead guitar player, and you're a pretty good pianist.
Well, you do just
or
fine.
Or is it pianist?
So, pianist. I could be either one.
It could be.
It's like flutist, flautist, whatever you want it to be.
Tomato, tomato. Johnny Dean, the bad boy of radio and television nowadays.
That's right.
In the house. I've got a lot of stuff to talk to you about today, John Boy. Schwab. Check
hey,
this
I've
out.
Heard of them.
Check this out.
Yeah.
Advised brokerage accounts have higher balances and better diversification than non-advised accounts. Go figure that.
So in other words, somebody who's been working with an advisor, and I assume they're looking at people who are invested with Schwab,
yeah,
obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
Those who are working with an advisor have better, higher rates of return. Is that what it said?
Pretty much, yeah. The report included data collected from some 137,000 retirement plan participants who currently have balances between $5,000 and $10 million. In their Schwab account. And here's what they had to say about the participants. Those who have a self-directed brokerage account and work with a financial advisor had better outcomes than non-advised participants. So remember the other day we were talking about how advisors can add value.
Yes.
And I think the number was like 3% per year.
3% per
this
year.
This is yet another study that makes the point that you don't hear much, especially from many of the brokerage firms like a Schwab. So to their credit, Schwab must have given this guy, Michael S. Fisher, who wrote this, must have given him the data somehow. They're saying, you know what? If you come to Schwab with an advisor, you're going to do better than if you just come to Schwab.
Well, we were talking about it with regard to Vanguard yesterday. Vanguard. Who comes out, and I think they may have been the first ones that I saw that said that whole advisor thing and 3%. I mean,
yeah, they were the first ones to.
You would think that they would be the ones to keep that under wraps, and yet they published it.
Well, a lot of the companies, including Schwab and Vanguard and all that, now have partnerships with advisors.
Wasn't it interesting how it evolved into that?
Yeah, really?
It really is, because the whole start of Vanguard was supposed to get away from that.
The DIY investor. In either event, I found another story that I thought that you, and this one's been around for a while, but it's the most fascinating thing. And when I was teasing you before the show, you were clueless, so I figured.
I was clueless before
no,
the show?
I'm just kidding.
Am I more wise now or what?
You are, since you're sitting here on the set with my
That's
bad
That's what
self.
It is. That's what
now,
it is.
Now, this is, and in all seriousness, a study called The Power of Working Longer. We talked about the value of financial advice and 3% more. Sometimes a good advisor or some decent financial advice can end up being as effective as saving an extra 1% a year for 30 years.
Per year, an
per
extra
year.
1%.
Here's what they say. Robert Powell is a smart guy, by the way. He writes for a lot of different, USA Today, you've seen him before. Delaying retirement, he says, and working just another 3 to 6 months has the same impact on the retirement standard of living as saving an additional 1 percentage point of labor earnings for 30 years. This, according to John Chauvin, an economics professor at Stanford University.
Stanford University. Well, sure. I mean, I guess it would make sense. You got, that's a salary you're making for the next 3 to 6 months.
Yeah, I think it's the whole package, delaying taking Social Security, the compounding of your returns, the extra savings that you
compounding,
could put in.
Compounding is a huge part of it.
It's a huge part of it because when you are near retirement, theoretically, your account balances are at their highest. And since the markets go up like 71% of the time or some percentage like that, 71% of the time, 6 months later, you got a lot more money.
For sure. I mean, you got a higher balance, obviously. The percentage goes up, and you're going to wind up with a lot more money. Absolutely. The question is, do people really want to work another 3 to 6 months?
Well, I know a lot of people. I know a lot of people like me that would say no.
Well,
I'm just kidding. No, I want to work. I want to work until I'm 80, man.
Yeah, but there are people out there, you know, who for whatever reason they're tired of it. A lot of them have physical jobs. You know, you've run into these people that are out there, you know, climbing telephone poles and you know working on roofs and all that stuff that you just can't do much after age 60. So there are those people that have a harder time doing it.
And you know how physical this job is, John?
Yeah, you know what? The most physical thing you did all day was chewing lunch.
How did you know?
I just guessed.
I actually, it wasn't lunch, it was brunch
today. It was brunch,
it was somewhere
okay.
between the two.
All right.
But it still ended in burger.
Oh, that's my favorite suffix, by the way.
844-RAY-SHOW is the number, by the way. If you want to jump on board, the call is free. The advice is priceless on the Ray program. Emails at raylucia.com, R-A-Y. LUCIA.com. I've got a lot of stuff on the docket today. I just don't know where to start. I really don't. Let's try this one. How to invest for the long term in a turbulent market. This isn't turbulent, is it?
No, just a lot of ups and downs.
Yeah,
I mean, is that turbulent?
I
don't think this is. Actually, for anybody who's in the market, this should come as no surprise. I mean,
should come as no surprise. But even the best money managers I know, that I've talked to, still are going, "Eh."
Well, you don't
got
like
a little
it.
Bit of the jitters. You know?
Don't like it, but actually, I mean, you got to look at it from the long term perspective, as I think you're about to tell us.
Well, here's what they had. I mean, they studied this stuff, and I'm trying to think of. I think it was Dimensional Fund Advisors. Check this out because it's interesting. Here's what they say. Number one. Investing for the long term allows you to take advantage of high return opportunities that others might shun. Well, that makes sense. Two, being a long-term investor helps guard against behavioral biases. That's definitely true, especially like recency bias and following the herd bias and all the biases.
Everything that's human nature.
Yeah. Long-term investing reduces frictional costs such as trading expenses and taxes. That makes sense. Evidence shows, and this is where I really wanted to go, that longer holding periods are associated with better performance. So Dimensional Advisors goes out and looks at the 15-year period ending 12/31/2015. Looked at the average holding periods and all that stuff. The data presented says this, when equity funds were divided into quartiles, based on their average holding period, a much higher percentage of funds with longer holding periods outperformed the benchmark over the full period than did funds in any of the other quartiles. And so I'm looking at a graph here. My eyes are getting worse and
what does
and
that
worse.
Mean?
Well, they claim the average holding period, and I've got to look it up here.
Of a fund?
Of an investor.
Okay.
Of an individual investor is like 1.5. Some odd years. Let me see. I got it right here.
So in other words, they'll buy a security or a fund or something, and on
or it could
average,
be a fund.
They're holding. On average, they're holding it for a year and a half.
Yeah. So here are the quartiles. The first quartile is the shortest. The average fund would hold a stock 0.5 years, and according to this graphic, it looks like their rate of return was about 7%.
Oh, they're talking about the fund holding the stock, not the investor holding.
No, it's the fund. I'm sorry.
Okay, all right.
The second quartile is holding the stock for 1.1 years, and it looks like about 10%. The third quartile is holding on for 1.6 years and looks like about 15%. And the longest quartile, 3.6 years, looks like about 22%.
You say 22% was what again? The
difference. I don't know because I just pulled this up.
So it's equity 22% better.
Average stock holding, period, and performance. So I think they're doing relative performance.
That's 22% exactly what they're doing.
More.
Yes. Not a 22% rate.
No, not a 22. Yes, not over 22%. 15 years.
So you could do 22% better by that. By that measure.
Yeah, let's call it 25% to make the numbers simple. That's a quarter. That's not chicken feed, right?
No, it's not.
So there is a benefit in long-term investing, but mostly because of the behavioral biases. Stick around. It's the Ray Program.
The world is changing.
Misery. I'm here with Johnny D.
This was a theme song for one of our former Brain Trust members.
Oh boy,
years
he
ago.
Was something else too. A good, great guy.
Great guy. Just
smart.
always looked at the dark side of life.
Yeah,
to via sort
as many
of quote
sticking in him as he had sticking out of him.
He would be
a porcupine.
Anyway, that was a theme song.
Have you looked at the rate of return on cash lately?
Not lately, although I have a money market that's still paying nothing. So
well, you need to change it, dude. The Fed, as you know, has raised interest rates 9 times since December 2015.
Yes. Nine times?
9 times. 1 month Treasury yields back then were 0.26%, where you probably still are.
It is, actually. It's close to that. 1 month?
1 month. That's up to 2.38% today.
Well, how come I'm not getting more on my money market?
Because you're not in a one-month treasury. You're in some stupid money market fund.
I'm in
a
money.
Bank.
Well, I mean, where am I? I got to put the cash somewhere. But okay, yeah.
Well, see me after the show. I'll help you out a little bit. You know, tell you where to go, and I might even show you some decent yielding money funds.
You can get 1 point something out of some of them.
2.38 right here on this piece of paper, John.
On a money market.
On a one-month T-bill.
That's a one-month T-bill.
Yeah.
Well, hey. You go out
a couple years, it's 2.58%. You go out 10 years, it's 2.7% or so now.
It was 2.6 something. It's gone down.
It
got up to 3.23 not that long, early November.
Yeah, it was a couple months ago.
Yeah.
So it's in the 2.7 range right now.
Yeah.
20 years, 2.91. 30 years, 3.06. What we've just done is showing you a flat yield curve, folks.
You are not rewarded for going out 30 as opposed to just sticking with 10, let's say.
That's right. You're getting 30 basis points more.
And you got to hold your money 20 years longer.
20 extra years. So that's what they call a flat yield curve. Now, what's really interesting, though, is a lot of money is flowing into cash. So I read this morning, by the way, from Michael Wursthorn. Investors are increasing their cash holdings at the fastest pace in a decade.
Does this mean they're selling their equities and
yep.
going to cash?
Yep, you hit it on the
so
head.
So they're timing the market?
They're not timing the market, they're just getting scared. They're getting you scared. Assets,
right.
Let me finish.
All right.
Assets and money market funds, which are generally used as a proxy for net new cash flows, have grown by more than $2 billion this month, according to Lipper.
Wow.
That comes on top of the $190 billion investors added to the funds in the final 3 months of last year, their biggest deposit since 2008. So basically, when the markets got volatile the last quarter of last year and certainly in December, people were running for the hills. And what did they leave, like 13% on the table still?
What are they, morons?
Well, they're just...
That's
rude. Ill-advised. Can we be nice?
They're human, too.
They're human, that's
they're
right.
Human. All right.
So this is really interesting. Investors, meanwhile, have added some $4 billion to stock funds this month. Doesn't this show you the behavioral biases?
Oops, I missed. I got to jump back in.
So they added $4 billion this month.
Yeah.
Well, they were talking about like the month of January.
Yes, yes.
After withdrawing nearly $100 billion in the fourth quarter. Wow.
What does that tell you, though? I mean, you know, we're not stock analysts. You know, we don't pay attention to that stuff on a day-to-day basis. But it tells me that people don't have a strategy. This is supposed to be long-term money, I thought.
Well, it is supposed to be, but an estimated 13% of investment portfolios now include cash, and that's up from 12% a year ago. And my question is this, it speaks to what you just said. If, in fact, you have an emergency fund, right? You got your emergency fund set aside. Everybody should have that. You don't have to, you know, listen to us to hear that because you hear it all the time from Susie Orman and Ramsey and all the guys, and they're all right.
Have cash,
right? Everybody's got to have a certain amount of liquidity. It doesn't have to be cash, by the way.
It could be a credit card.
It could be a credit card. It could be a trust deed, or a line of credit.
Sure. Yeah.
Now, that's what I used. I never held cash.
No.
But if your investment portfolio is holding 13% cash, then it's either there because you're super scared and you're going to try to time the market and reinvest that money when things get better, but you missed it already, dude. You missed it already.
I'll wait till it comes back down.
Since Christmas Eve, I think the market's up like 12 or 13%.
Well, it had. I haven't checked the statistics. I think it had its best January, the S&P, since 1987 something.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, the S&P.
Yeah.
So why would you, in a long-term investment account, hold a bunch of cash? But investors are doing that, and according to Jerry Freund, an investor in Orange County, New York, he says he sold his entire portfolio of small caps and shares of bigger companies such as Microsoft during one of the Dow Jones Industrial Average's declines in October. So he's patting himself on the back and kicking himself in the tail at the same time.
Does he say why?
No, I don't want to get into that because I want to talk to our viewers and listeners about this. Folks, it makes no sense for you to play portfolio manager and time your investments. Because time and time again, you will make the wrong moves at the wrong times. Now, this has been studied academically, study after study after study after study. And not a single one that I can recall has ever shown any success ratio that extends beyond once or twice. In other words, if you do it once, write a book, John, about how you got rich quick. Because the next time around, it ain't going to happen.
Well, we saw that. You know, who was it? Was it Elaine Garzarelli or somebody back in the 80s?
And there's a name out of the past.
You remember that? There were a few of them, not just Elaine, but there were a couple of them who you know.
Yeah, Marty's wife. I mean,
there's another one. Yeah, right. Hey, I called it. Oh, boom, wrote a book. Yeah. Genius. Yeah, and then nothing.
I think that was the last time Elaine Garzarelli was right, too.
Well, and that's not a criticism of Elaine Garzarelli. It's just the way it is.
What is it if you end up on the front cover of Sports Illustrated?
Well, that's
it's like
the curse
of death.
Yeah, or I think the other one, more recent, is Madden, the Madden football cover, the video game cover, supposedly.
Oh, and yeah, so.
The John Madden, yeah, you know what I'm talking
about. Yeah, I know what you're talking about, but I've never played the game.
No, I haven't either, but I think there's a, you know, they put an athlete on the cover,
oh,
usually, and yeah, supposedly bad things happen. I don't know.
By the way,
but
you just defined my life.
What's
you
that?
Know? Well, sure. When I was a high school quarterback and I made the front page of the sports section, he threw for 326 yards. The next
every
game,
time. The
I
next
would
game,
suck.
People all come out, well, we got to go see this guy. We got to go,
yeah.
This Lucia guy.
I got friends, relatives flying in from Philly because my mother sent out the article.
Right, yes. And they're all going to come see you. And what you're going to do is go act for pass. You're going to pull a Garo Yepremian when he's trying to, and it's going to fall off your hand and hit you in the head.
Garo Yepremian.
Wasn't it
oh
him?
My
wasn't
Lord.
He
yeah,
the one?
It was.
Yeah.
It was.
That's
yeah.
What you're, that's exactly what happens.
I actually threw a left-handed pass once in a football game.
Hey.
It was 3 yards, and we lost 8.
Was it? Well, of course you did.
I tossed it. My right arm was being held by one of the tacklers.
So
I tossed it to my left hand.
Oh, you
and
did.
And I threw it. Ask my brother Joe. He was there.
Pat Mahomes just did it, not that
that's
long
that's right.
Yeah, my man.
He is your man.
All right.
Well, Brady is my man.
Oh, come on.
don't go away. Hey, welcome back, folks. This is the Ray Lucia Show. along with Johnny B. Good Dean.
This is John. This is also the same intro for I think it was Fun Fun Fun.
Well, Fun 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 they, and Roll Over Beethoven.
Yeah, Beethoven. But Chuck Berry did Roll Over Beethoven and this one.
And Johnny. Beach Boys.
Beach
copied
Boys
it.
Copied it. And I think they wound up paying Chuck Berry some amount of money.
That's the first really cool guitar lick I learned.
It was the first one I ever heard.
That was
got
a
lot of
cool
people
one
playing guitar.
I learned Outer Limits. And then I learned Chuck Berry. Yeah.
There's a good one. We should play that.
Well, it only had two notes in it.
Well, how easy is that to play? I mean, my goodness. That's if you're going to learn guitar, learn that one.
Absolutely. Johnny Dean, you had something on your docket there. I've got more stuff here.
I don't know how hard-hitting this is or substantive, but every once in a while I like to throw this stuff in. How much money Americans think you need to be considered rich?
$1 million.
No. Actually, it's not. Well, that's the headline, but then they say an annual income. So here's what they say. Annual income of about $100,000. Most Americans say you're going to be rich if you have $100,000, if you make $100,000 a year. The amount of money that you actually need to have, let's see if they had that here. Well, here's how they broke it down. Just very quick. This is nothing that's going to knock your socks off, but it's just kind of interesting. This is part of a Pew analysis. You've heard of them?
Sure.
They broke down.
They stink.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I was thinking just the seats at church, but whichever. The full breakdown of how much money you would have to earn each year to be considered upper class, according to the Pew research, it depended on the size of your household. If you're a household of one, they say a minimum of $78,000 a year. Household of two, you need $110,000. Household of three, you need $135,000. Four, $156,000, and a household of five needs a minimum of $175,000 per year coming in to be considered upper class and to be considered rich. Now, one more thing. They asked respondents if they considered themselves to be rich or poor. It found that the majority said they are neither. A quarter say they're poor, while just 5% consider themselves rich. No matter who
they ask. I mean, if you ask anybody that's middle class, they're not going to say I'm rich or poor. They're going to say I'm in the middle somewhere.
Well, that's kind of what they did. The remaining 6% said they don't know. I don't know. Of those earning between $40,000 and $60,000 a year, 7% considered themselves rich. So again, it's all, you know, first of all, if you're used to making $20,000 and you're a young guy and you get a job that pays you $60,000, you're going to consider yourself to be rich, I would think.
I am rich.
If
I am totally rich, but it has nothing to do with money.
No.
I am blessed, and you are too. And so I don't really dig those kind of surveys, because I know people that make $40,000 or $50,000 a year, and they're rich as can be. They're way richer than me, financially speaking,
well, sure,
because they live so frugally.
Yes. Well, that's true. And there's some people who are absolutely miserable making, you know, $500,000 a year. One last thing. Almost half of those making more than $100,000 a year think you need at least $500,000 a year to count as rich. So what does that tell you? It tells you the more money you make doesn't necessarily make you either happier or make you feel like you're wealthy.
It does kind of make you a little bit happier.
It does. Didn't they say there was a point that it stops, though?
Yeah, 75,000. Now it's like 100.
Yeah.
But you bring this up, and I will tell you that rich Americans, and this is an actual study, so you kind of do want to be rich in some respects if you
can. Sure, absolutely.
Rich Americans live up to 15 years longer than their poorer peers. This according to Lancet, a British medical journal. But they're talking about Americans. I was going to say, what do the Brits know about us?
They're boring. They study Americans.
Here's what it said. Among the studies, key findings. The richest 1% live up to 15 years longer than the poorest 1%. The same gap in life expectancy widened in recent decades, making poverty a powerful indicator for death. More than one-third of low-income Americans avoid medical care because of costs.
Sure.
I guess this plays into the Kamala Harris mantra of the one-payer system.
Yeah, you have it already for those over age 65 in the form of Medicare, where the insurer is the federal government. And what they're saying is, why not let everybody be insured by the government? But yeah, I mean, they're going to have to do something about it. It can't
Something has to be done. I don't think the solution, personally speaking, is having the government take over 16% of the entire economy.
Well, they wouldn't really take it over. They would just simply be the insurer. It's an insurance plan. Well, maybe not.
I mean, the VA is
what you're thinking about,
yes,
where the government takes over the entire thing. No, they wouldn't. It wouldn't be a VA. VA has some issues on its own. It's simply taking Medicare, which works great, and expanding it out. That's all they're talking about.
Well,
but something does need to be done.
We're going to find out where it goes from here.
It's going to get more popular.
It is very popular.
I predicted in 20 years because, you know, it's the young people that are going to be taken over here. The millennials, when they get into their 40s, they're going to be the ones elected, just like the one from New York, whatever her name. There are going to be others that are going to come along, 30s and 40s. When they get to that age, they're going to be holding the purse strings, and they're going to be, you're going to see public colleges again. You're going to see people with, you know, Medicare for all.
Yeah, I think it'll keep the Canadians out of the U.S., actually. They won't be coming here for their health care
anymore.
Actually,
you know what? I thought you used to think that. They love their system, apparently, as they do in England and all those other places. So
they love their system until they get sick.
I don't know. You hear those stories. The ones that I've talked to have said they.
Well, they're close to the Mayo Clinic, so they just hop across the border and.
I don't think they want to go out of pocket. They would much rather have it paid for. Because if they come here, they got to pay for it themselves.
That's true. 844 Ray Show is the number. Happiness is linked to a longer life. This at health.com. As you know, I'm into health now.
Oh, I know you are. Now, wait, happiness is linked to... So the older you are, the happier you are?
Here's what the story highlights suggest. Older people are up to 35% less likely to die if they report feeling happy. That's making the guys that toke it up much, much happier for sure. Because they're going to live longer. Well, can you imagine we got to put up with these dudes toking it up in the parking lot for that much longer?
We've already seen that. I've already seen that. So, yeah, I mean, heck, if they're happy, whatever. What do I care?
Absence of happiness may be more important than presence of negative emotions. That kind of makes sense.
Absence of happiness. Okay, yeah.
Regions of the brain involved in happiness are also involved in blood vessel function.
Oh, sure.
I'm also not going to touch that one either. That's a different
look
story.
Look at it from a from a blood pressure point of
view.
Yes,
exactly.
The more aggravated you are, the more upset you are, the blood pressure, I mean, they constrict. I'm not a doctor, but this is what I've read.
Yeah, but I'm a fat guy, and my blood pressure is 100 over 60.
Well, you're probably a fairly content guy.
Yeah, most of the time.
I mean, you're kind of laid back.
Some would argue that. My wife, in particular,
would argue against that, or
she would argue that I'm not laid back.
You are.
But I think I am.
You're not you're not intense like
not
I
like
know
Joe
some
Pesci.
Intense people.
I mean, no, I mean, I'm like an Italian guy, but not the Joe Pesci type.
The Joe Pesci in Goodfellas.
In Goodfellas.
No, you're not like that. Maybe more like
or
Joe
Casino.
Pesci in or Casino. Those two movies are interlocking. But the one in My Cousin Vinny, he
that's
seems kind of laid back.
That's me. Yeah.
That is more like you.
The two Utes.
I could see it. Yeah. I would love to hear that.
Being happy just doesn't improve the quality of your life. According to the new study, it may increase the quantity of your life as well. Older people were up to 35% less likely to die during the five-year study if they reported feeling happy, excited, and content on a typical day. So what does this tell you, folks? You know, we talk all the time about money, and we're diverting a little bit today. Because we want you to live a long time. And stress sucks. I mean, take it from a guy that had a heart attack in the middle of Lake Powell and had to be life flighted because when they finally got to me, the chase boat out in the middle of Lake Powell finally got to me, I said, well, get me into the marina quick. I got to go to the hospital. They said, dude, you will die in Page at the hospital in Page, Arizona. Have you ever been to Page, Arizona?
No, but I know it's in the middle of... Like,
they have no cardiac unit. So
no. They
said, we're calling the helicopter. You know, helicopter
sure,
comes.
Yeah.
Lands on a little hill that's maybe 5x7. And I get in there, and I had a beautiful view, by the way, of the Grand Canyon, but my chest was killing me.
So you didn't really notice the Grand Canyon
not
so much.
Not much.
You felt
not
like
much.
A cave in your chest.
It was okay. My wife was saying, are you okay, honey, in between Hail Marys?
Yes.
I get there, and sure enough, talk about modern medicine. You know, this is the whole thing of extending life and longevity. I think they broke the world's record for putting one of these massive stents in my so-called widowmaker.
This was a number of years. This wasn't that
this
long
was
ago.
But three this was, and a half years ago.
Yeah.
And I've been fine ever
you're
since.
All right.
Yeah, I got that stent cooking, man.
Yeah, you're doing fine.
I even had a burger this morning. My cardiologist is going to call up and say, what are you, crazy?
Couldn't be a veggie burger, could it?
Happiness is a warm, no. Happiness is linked to a longer life.
So you better be happy is the question, but what makes you happy?
Being rich.
You know what? Maybe.
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 Not rich, but well off.
Yeah.
Take a quick break. Come back with more of the Ray Lucia Show. Some content just ahead. Now, welcome back, folks. Call me on the line. Call me anytime, but right about now, because we're running toward the end of this hour of Money Power. We are definitely glad to have you on board. If you'd like to email me, though, go to raylucia.com, RayLucia.com. Okay, it's time for the email Seggy. Hit it, fellas.
Oh, there's supposed to be a music there.
Oh, yeah, there was. One's funny. Oh, yes. There we go.
There you go. The Marvelettes. You know, I didn't correct myself.
Yeah, that was the other day we were talking about. Was it the Marvelettes or the something-ettes?
Yeah, Marvelettes.
Or the Shondells, yes.
I can't remember. Maybe that's going to be on tomorrow's show. No, I think it's the Marvelettes.
Okay.
The original. This one.
Okay.
Yes. All right. Sam in Honolulu, Hawaii. I wouldn't mind being there right now. Better than Chicago. I have three 401k plans from past employers. Should I combine them? What are the rollover rules to consider? How do I decide on a manager? I have Fidelity, ING, and TIAA Cref. So he's got three 401k plans. Obviously, he's already left the work.
Did you tell him we start charging after, you know, one question or two?
I told him three. I said three strikes, three questions, so he gave us the three.
All right, so let's take one at a time, all right? He's got three different 401k plans, is that what he said?
Yes, three different plans. Wants to know if he should combine them, and what about rollover rules and then deciding on a manager?
Okay, well, combining them and rolling over are two different things. If you combine them, that would presuppose that you've got a job and you already have a 401k, and you can roll the other two into the one 401k in which you are working. And it may make some sense to do that, although I probably would not. I like the idea of certainly combining them to a certain extent if you're going to do a pie chart kind of a plan. But you do have a lot more options. You know, the 401k plans today, you either have too few or too many options, and none of them turn me on all that much. So I guess it's just me. I'll give you an example, John. Right now, you can buy a bond fund, right? And in any 401k, they've got a fixed income, a whole bunch of probably 42 different bond funds.
Yeah.
So you want a reasonably safe bond fund. Or in your IRA, you can go to a bank and buy a CD. So which one would you prefer? Well, in a rising interest rate environment, you might prefer the CD over the bond fund, but you can't buy a CD in most 401k plans. So I like the idea of the rollover to an IRA. As far as the rules for doing that, you've got to go from the trustee of the 401k plan directly to the custodian of the IRA. If you don't do that, if the company sends you a check, they're going to withhold 20% and send it off to the government in anticipation of you cashing the whole sucker in. Even if you don't, they're going to withhold the money. And you're going to pay tax on that 20% if you don't add 20% to the money they just sent you and roll the 80% they gave you plus the 20% you added. And then you've got to go, you know, wait for a refund on your tax return. So that's just not advisable. So you do a trustee to custodian rollover. It's a simple form. They do it. They don't send you a check.
You don't want to get a check. You're right. Now this is an important point that you brought up here, Ray. You have $100,000 that you say, you know, that you want to get out of your 401k and move to an IRA. They send you the money, but they're going to send you $80,000.
because $20,000 was withheld as was required, sent to the IRS as a down payment. Now, you want to put that money into the IRA. Well, you if you just put $80,000 because that's what they sent you into the IRA, you're going to be taxed on that. That's money you lose. That tax is gone. That's a distribution. And if you're underage, you put $80,000 back in the IRA, let's say you do it in time, you have to put all $100,000. You got to get $20,000 from somewhere else.
That's right. I had a case years ago. One of my friends.
I was hoping you'd bring this up because it was a lot of money.
One of my friends that we knew from the kids' Little League and all that stuff, and he fashioned himself as a tremendous DIY investor.
Yes.
And he had $800,000 in his retirement account. And so we said, we offered to help him. It didn't cost anything. We'd have helped him, did the forms and all that stuff. But he wanted to do it himself. And he checked the wrong box, and he got a check. But his check wasn't $800,000. It was $800,000 minus $160,000.
$640,000.
He had to come up with, literally, that extra $160,000 within a couple months.
Oh, well, I mean, you got to get it into the IRA. Is that part of the 60-day rule?
Yeah, it's a 60-day rule.
Yeah, he had to get it in within 60 days. He had to come up with $140,000.
But he didn't realize that the whole thing was transpired until he went to the bank with the check. He opened it up in the envelope, and he goes, it's only $800,000. He calls the company. He's saying, you shorted me.
We're missing $160,000. Yeah.
He was able to get a mortgage, but he was sweating BBs, let me tell you.
Because you're going to wind up, you're going to lose that money.
Yeah, you got to be really, really careful with that. What was the second? He had another question?
Yeah, we do. Let's see.
We're killing the whole segment on this guy.
I know. Okay, I got about 2 minutes here. Let's see here. Leo in Sun City. My wife is going to inherit an annuity probably sometime in the next few years. We're retired. She's 63. I'm 64. Can the annuity be put into an existing Roth IRA?
Well, it can be, but you're going to have to pay tax and open up a Roth IRA. And if it exceeds, $6,000 or $7,000, depending on how old you are, then you're not going to be able to do it. Remember, a Roth IRA is an individual retirement account. An annuity is an annuity, and never the twain shall meet. So the easy answer is no. Because I don't think you're going to want to cash the annuity out and then purchase a Roth. I think you're thinking of a conversion
because they're retired. So I'm assuming he's got no earned income.
The answer is negatory.
Because there's no way, unless he's got some other, he's retired, but he has earned income he'd have to cash out the annuity, he'd have to pay taxes on it, and then he could make a contribution to a Roth, but only if he's working.
Right, and he's going to be limited to the $6,000 or $7,000.
Right, exactly. But it doesn't seem like he's doing that. So yeah,
although if he's married, he can maybe double it up. But if he's got a $100,000 annuity, it's not going to fly.
There are rules here that you don't want to run afoul of. And annuities are interesting. I don't know how old Leo. Well, yes, I do. He's 64. People with annuities that are under age 59 and a half, sometimes they forget that any of that money that they cash out is not only taxed; they're going to be penalized.
That is true, unless they take it out under 72Q, but we won't get into that.
No, we never talk about 72Q.
Well, that's because we don't. It's because it's so obscure. Who would want to listen to it?
Who would want to do that? sounds like a bad FM station somewhere in Anchorage, listening to 72Q.
Well, you're listening to a really good AM station and some FM stations around the country right now. This is, of course, the one talk show you must tune into every day, because if you miss a minute, you miss a lot on the Ray Lucia Show. God bless. Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Ray Lucia Show, bringing you the best in money information, answering questions about your biggest financial challenges, talking about your money, your business, and your life. Ray Lucia is not a registered representative of or affiliated with any securities brokerage or investment advisory firm. The views and opinions expressed by Ray and his guests are not necessarily those of this station or its sponsors and should not be construed as legal, tax, or investment advice. You should always consult with the appropriate advisors before making any financial decisions. Ray is available to take your questions online at raylucia.com.